Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. My name is Darren Fote, and today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. Tonight's author on tour is acclaimed director, producer, and writer Clive Barker, author of the stunning new book, Visions of Heaven and Hell, published by Rizzoli. In the weeks to come, we have Charles Blackstone, Lemony Snicket, Walter Kern, Nicholas Sparks, Will Arntz, Joan Didion, Lynn Truss, and many more. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a minute, it's time to begin.
Thank you all for coming this evening. It is my great pleasure to welcome Clive Barker once again to the Tattered Cover after what seems like a very long time. How many of you were here the last time Clive was here? See, a whole generation has grown up with that. Mr. Barker has been here a number of times for his novels and short story collections, but this time he is here to introduce his book of paintings and drawings. He is titled Visions of Heaven and Hell. How appropriate that he has put together this collection of his art, because according to him, he first started drawing as a shy child in order to express himself, and that led to explanations of his drawings. Can you imagine that they needed to be explained? Which resulted in the stories he later committed to paper. He has since made his mark as a best-selling novelist, playwright, screenwriter, director, and producer, in addition to illustrator and artist, and I might add, one of the nicest and most generous authors to his fans I know. I must add, for those of you who don't know, that Aberrat is presently in feature film production with Disney Studios, so we have something to look forward to. Please join me in welcoming this multi-talented master of dark fantasy and horror, Clive Barker.
Thank you. Thank you, Margaret, for inviting me back to the store that I regularly describe around the world as the best bookstore in the world, which is Tattered Cover. I've always believed that, and I have a huge fondness for this place. Here's what I thought we might do. I'll summarize in 5 minutes roughly where I am in projects looming, projects finished, projects which I've forgotten about, and then I'll hand it over to you so we can get to the Q&A thing, which is, I think, much more interesting than listening to me talk. It's getting a little dialogue going. So let me just start then with where I am. I am writing right now a novel called The Scarlet Gospels, which began as a novella, became a 500-page novel. It is about Harry D'Amore, who's the character I've written about before, and his descent into hell, much like Dante. But instead of being in pursuit of Beatrice, he's in pursuit of the guy with the pins in his head from Hellraiser. And the ending cannot be happy. I'm not breaking any secrets to say that I've already said that the pinhead will die in this book in order to liberate him from the movies. At least we hope so. So that's that. We have Visions of Heaven and Hell just coming out this week. In December and January, I will have an exhibition of my paintings in Los Angeles. And so as to make everything even-handed, we will put reproductions of all the paintings and drawings online so that if people want to buy the pictures, though they can't see them, as it were, in the flesh, at least they can get a good idea of what they look like, and if they wish to purchase, can do so. It was the only way I could think of making it work even-handedly. And I've tried to bring some of the smaller pieces, smaller black and white pieces, into the sale, so that there'll be paintings for $200-$300, besides the big ones, which are slightly more expensive. So that's that. I don't know, despite what Margaret says, whether we will end up making Aberrat with Disney. There's a certain disconnect between Disney and myself. And I can't tell you anything more than that, though it would be terribly fun to do so. So, I mean, the movie will get made. I have painted all the paintings for book three. And as you perhaps know, I paint the paintings and then write the books after that. So I've made the paintings, and I am ready, once I finish Scarlet Gospels, to write book three, which is called Absolute Midnight. We have just finished making a movie called The Plague up in Canada. We are about to start shooting, we being my company, Seraphim. We're about to start shooting The Midnight Meat Train, which is a story from the early books of Blood, hopefully in New York. The first book I did for younger readers, The Thief of Always, is also hopefully going to go before the cameras next year. So that's that. Television, I've just... signed off on John McNaughton, who made Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer. It's a marvelous horror movie. Signed off on John directing a story I wrote called Heichel's Tale, which is a very sexy horror story, sort of sexy zombie story, if you can imagine that. Bits fall off, but they're lovingly falling off. And so John will direct that for a series called Masters of Horror, which will appear on, I think, Showtime. It is Showtime. There we go. So that's me. Let's get into some questions and have half an hour of answering questions or observations or whatever you guys might have. Who's going to be first? Yes. Interesting. Very interesting question. I went to Harvard Commons in 6-7 years ago in England, and I took with me two projects. One of them was the Aberrat, the paintings from the Aberrat series. I hadn't written anything, though I had an outline of what the story might be. And the other was a book I wanted actually to call The Scarlet Gospels, but it was going to be erotica with illustrations. Not all gay by any manner of means, mixed, pansexual. And I pitched these two projects. I pitched them in this order. I gave them Aberrat. I showed them Aberrat. They were charmed. They cooed. They smiled. And then I showed them the Scarlet Gospels, and they hissed and withdrew and drew, you know. We're not having any of that. So the answer is they let me go on and have my fun with Aberrat, and they have been marvelously supportive of Aberrat. And when I did some, you know, pretty strange sex scenes in Cold Heart Canyon, again, no problem. Nobody has ever censored me, ever. Not quite true. One sentence, but most of the time I've got away scot free. So my answer generally would be I've had no problems. Occasionally, online, you will find somebody saying, this man is a pervert. He shouldn't be writing for children. And I write back to my mother immediately and tell her not to. I'm joking. My mother's not that literate. Next question. Yes, sir. Let me answer those in opposite direction. The film footage for Nightbreed is somewhere in the vast vaults of Fox. It has been in the vast vaults of Fox all the time that I've been coming here, practically. They don't know where it is. They know they have it, but they don't know where it is. And nor will they give me the key to the vault, because I think there are dead directors down there who went looking for pieces of their film and never found their way out again. So I would love to put the 25 minutes of material back into the picture. The reality is that I can't do that without Fox finding the material. I made a huge mistake in letting them take this material in the first place and saying, oh, don't worry, kid, we'll look after it, you know. It was a foolish thing to do, but, you know, when you're at the end of making a movie, you're very tired. You tend to get a little punch drunk, and I let them, you know, as I say, walk away with those pieces, thinking that I would find them at a later date. Joe Dante later gave me the advice that all filmmakers should simply steal the material that they want and keep it in their garage, which is what he did with The Howling, which is a werewolf movie he made a long time ago. When they wanted to reconstruct it, it was there in his garage. Very smart move. I wasn't smart enough at the time, so I have to rely upon Fox. The Tortured Souls project will go forward. Whether it will go forward with me as director or not remains... I wish I were cloned. Because I'm a 53-year-old man and I have to start making decisions about how I use my time. There is the ABRAP books are in 32 languages. There are letters that come in Icelandic saying, write book three. There's letters coming in Chinese saying, write book three. And there's a certain element of that. And actually, there's a certain pressure in me to do it, too. There's a third book of the art, which I passionately want to write, and is huge. And I've got sketched out, but I haven't written yet. There's a second book of Galilee yet to do. And I enjoy painting immensely, so I want to continue to do that. If I have to make choices, and I think I do have to make choices at this stage, with, you know, another 40 years of creation ahead of me, you know, and way too much already up here to fill 40 years, I'm bound to say that I'm going to choose the media which allow me the most control over the end result. Movies don't allow you that, and less they allow you that, because the movies are more and more expensive, and they're more and more the product of committees. And so I'm bound to say that if I have to think about the next 5 years and what it's full of, I think it's going to be more full of Abrats 3 and 4 and the third book of the art and a bunch more paintings before I get to Tortured Souls. And is that a painful decision? Yes. I love getting out of a very big car every morning and having a bunch of people say, sir, what would you like, sir? Would you like tea and your coffee, sir? And so on. But the joys of filmmaking, of the process, are so easily soured by the second part of the process, which is that which involves the studios. Because then they give it to a bunch of 15-year-olds to look at, and the 15-year-olds say, I didn't like the bit with the banana, so you take out the bit with the banana. You know, it becomes this terrible, terrible committee process. It's horrible. So that's, sorry, it was a long-winded answer, but I wanted you to know what kind of juggling I'm trying to do here. Who has it?
Yes, sir.
Ah, but that's a Hellraiser movie, isn't it? I didn't see it, so that's an easy one. That's an easy one. There's only so much masochism you can take in a week. And certainly wasn't going to visit that upon myself. The Lovecraft thing. Lovecraft had an enormous cosmic vision. And that I have embraced wholly. I love the idea that if you put all of my books together, the children's books, the illustrated books, the large books, the small books, the sexy books, the whatever, somewhere underpinning them all, or maybe overarching them all, are basic principles about reality, basic investigations and possible solutions to the problem of reality. Which the inspirer of which was certainly Lovecraft. Now, Lovecraft the stylist isn't where I want to be. I took from Jonathan Swift this wonderful idea. He read his texts aloud to his servants, who couldn't, of course, read back in 18th century England, in order that they understand. And I try and make my English workable. Very seldom do I go to the dictionary and look for a word. I'll try and use the words that are up here. Occasionally I'll dig around, but very seldom. I want the work to be approachable, and so I find Lovecraft's... Boy, you do need a dictionary with Lovecraft, don't you? I mean, there's a lot of big words in there. And he may be inventing some, because at a certain time I'm over the dictionary thing. I just go, okay, sure, it means big or something. Because it usually does end up meaning big, you know. The toenail of the thing was big. A question. Yes, sir. A huge amount of Clive Barker is in Will Rabjohn's the hero or anti-hero lead character of Sacrament, a gay man searching through the life of animals. I love animals. My husband David and myself, we share passion for animals. Our house has parrots and cockatiels and dogs and fishes and geckos and all kinds of other wonderful things. A few human beings there too. And it's part of my understanding. It's part of the way I understand the world is through the eyes of animals. So Will and I had a lot in common. I like to think in Magica, Gentle and Judith are both parts of me. Interestingly, the only other person I would point to would be Cal Mooney in Weave World, because the Liverpudlian background, that's the life I might have led had I not fled Liverpool and run away to join the circus, as you will see. I joined. Another question.
Yes, sir.
We actually had an accountant. This is always a good sign. When the accountants appear, it's a good sign. We had an accountant up from the studio to start dealing with the money. Yes, I think it's going to happen next year. Who will direct it? I'm not sure. I'm fighting for a few people, and I don't want to name them just yet because I feel that's almost asking for trouble. But yes, I think we'll have that movie happen. I don't mean movie, three two-hour episodes, I think is how it will be. Yeah, miniseries of 6 hours in total. I don't think it can be anything shorter. I think it would be foolish to try it something shorter. Yes, yes, sir. Yes, Heichel's Tale is a short story I wrote 2 or 3 years ago. You know, the 500 pages of Scarlet Gospels is a short story that just, you know, grew. I that's happened to me a lot. Weave World was a short story for kids. I have the illustrations. I have the illustrations I did to start it going. This little boy standing on a carpet surrounded by auctioneers. Yeah, so things change, things develop. But for me, what happens very often is the mythology seizes hold of me, and it just gets bigger and bigger and more. I just get more and more passionate about it. I suppose that's what it is. Yeah, there's always more to tell. Tolkien says in the preface to Lord of the Rings, he says there's only one thing wrong with this book: it's not long enough. And when I first read that, I thought, "Oh, you poser, you know, please, this is the longest thing I've ever read." But when you come to see how much love and commitment there is in that book, you begin to see that there's truth in what he says. Yes, there's room, there's plenty more room for more Lord of the Rings. And I have at the very back of my head, a book which will be a magicka times whatever the number will be, one big, humongous, biblical thing. And I love the idea of you know, starting with that idea and that hugeness. I may end up with a short story. A few more questions, yes. Who's going to be next? Yes, sir. I had wanted to do a series like Narnia for a very long time. I'd been to HarperCollins over and over again. They didn't want to see it. They didn't want me to do it. And it was the paintings. I started to paint, and I started to make this world through the paintings. And this world was nothing like anything I'd really made before. It became very intriguing to me. I painted probably 250 paintings before I started to even put a name to this world. So it just happened, and I think it happened because I wanted to honor the books that began my reading passions, which were, you know, Narnia and yes, Lord of the Rings and Peter Pan and so on. I didn't expect it to happen the way that it did, which is through paintings, but actually that's turned out to be a very nice addition. We have a house next door to the house in which we live, which has 560 Abarat paintings in it right now, many of which will never find their way into an Abarat book. There isn't going to be room, but nevertheless of being part of the process of my getting to know the world. Yes. I go to the canvas almost never with a very specific idea beyond, say, this will be a figure as opposed to this will be a landscape. I don't sketch. I don't sketch onto the canvas. I have horrendous failures very regularly, which are either slashed with a Stanley knife, if David doesn't get to me first and hold my hand. And he saved many a painting from you know, my thuggery. But really, the process is pretty straightforward. I just get up there and I take a journey. Paul Klee, the Belgian painter, says drawing is taking a line for a walk, which I think is a wonderful phrase. I'm taking a lot of paints for a marathon run, you know, and I've got usually 4 or 5 canvases going at the same time. I've got some at the back, which I think are the runts of the litter and probably will meet the Stanley knife at some point. And then there's some that I think still have some hope in them. And sometimes I'll come back and I'll find that if I turn a painting upside down, I like it better. Be surprised the things you can find if you turn a painting upside down. 2 more questions before we start to sign. Yes, sir. Why would they choose Midnight Meat Train? I think the title instantly said to them, nobody will think this is a musical. it announces its horrific intentions, I think, you know, in a very straightforward way. And I think that's useful, actually, in this crowded marketplace. Good movies, Frailty, lovely movie, completely ignored because what was this movie going to be about? Nobody doubts that the Midnight Meat Train is not pleasant. You say, yeah, right, never sleep in the subway, right, exactly. One more question. Who? Yes, sir. I've always said there would be a third book of the art. And I've always planned that, and I've always felt the story so far is just really half of the story I want to tell. It's a warm-up. Weave World is complete unto itself, I think, and to revisit it, I think, would be to chance violating whatever qualities it has. Wordsworth wrote early in his life a poem called The Prelude, which is magnificent. And late in his life, having nothing else to do, he fiddled with it and screwed it up horribly, made a horrible mess of it. And I think if you sort of look at the two side by side, you see what the problem is. And I think Weave World, you know, I wrote it when I was, 33 or whatever. It achieves whatever it achieves. It fails wherever it fails. But I would never like to risk spoiling whatever is there on the page. So I think I'll leave the carpet to take the journey it's taken. I think we should sign books and flesh and stuff, yes? Thank you.
That's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Fode, and we have been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Stay pod-tuned in the coming weeks for Charles Blackstone, Lemony Snicket, Walter Kern, Nicholas Sparks, Will Arntz, Joan Didion, Lynn Truss, and many more as we podcast Authors on Tour. This podcast was originally recorded on October 20th, 2005.